We are up to date as far as the previous sessions in the study on your operation of the God-given ability. So all 18 of the previous sessions that we did are posted at philaword.org, philaword.org. Okay. So we've been looking at the revelation manifestations. We've been through the definitions a couple of times, so I'm not going to do that again tonight. We've also looked at some examples of people receiving the revelation through word of knowledge, word of wisdom, discerning of spirits. We looked at a number of them in the book of Acts. Last week, we also looked at Jeremiah chapter 1 and saw how the very first time that God approached him, it says the word of the Lord came unto him, God actually showed him how to receive revelation and confirmed to him that he was receiving it correctly. He'd show him a picture and say, "What do you see, Jeremiah?" And Jeremiah would tell him what he saw. And then God said, "You have well seen," and then told him what it meant. And then he did it a second time. And that established a pattern for Jeremiah where he would know for certainty the things that God showed him so he could very confidently speak it when he was told to speak it. Now, not every revelation is necessarily going to be for someone to share with somebody else, okay? God could show you things by word of knowledge, word of wisdom, discerning of spirits, and it's just between you and him. But if he gives you a word of wisdom that says to say these words to somebody else, whether it's an individual or a group, or put it in writing, then you share it. Otherwise, you can always ask God if you can, but I wouldn't just automatically go telling people that you got some revelation just because you think it's cool. And they might think it's cool. God does things for a specific reason, but it's not just so you think it's cool, okay? Even though it very well may be. But that's not the reason for it. So this evening we're going to look at Samuel. So if you go to 1 Samuel, please. And I think there's enough about Samuel here, it's going to fill up the whole study night session. So we're going to be in the Old Testament most of the time here. We'll take a little side trip here and there to make sure we cover all our bases. But go to 1 Samuel chapter 1, please. The point I want to get to is where Samuel learns how to receive revelation from God. But first, there's a little background that will make that section live even more for you, okay? So starting in chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "Now there was a certain man of Ramath-im-Zophim of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah." This is Samuel's father, okay? Elkanah was the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephrathite. And he had two wives, because that was allowed back then in the days of the Old Testament. He had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. This is going to be Samuel's mother. And the name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And we'll see that this is going to be a cause of great distress for her. She's frustrated. She's grieving because of this. The other wife has kids. She has none. And the other wife keeps rubbing her nose in it. Verse 3 says, "And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh." That's where the tabernacle with the Ark of God was at this time. "And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there." And we're going to see that Hophni and Phinehas are bad guys. So just to establish who this Elkanah is and Samuel's family, go to 1 Chronicles, please, chapter 6. We're going to come back here. But in 1 Chronicles, chapter 6, they have these wonderful genealogies, which most people don't bother reading. But this one I thought was interesting because it gives us a little more clues about Samuel. And verse 31, 1 Chronicles 6, 31, then says, "These are they whom David set over the service of song in the house of the Lord after the ark had rest." So David was around during the days of Samuel, but he outlived Samuel. You know, Samuel was an older man when David was a younger man. But when David became king, in actual fact, you know, sitting on the throne, he set up people to sing songs in the tabernacle area, and then after Solomon built the temple, that they would sing there. Verse 32 says, "And they ministered before the dwelling place of the tabernacle of the congregation with singing until Solomon had built the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. And they waited on their office according to their order. And these are they that waited with their children of the sons of the Kohathites, Heman," he was a singer, "the son of Joel, the son of Shemuel." Shemuel is Samuel, okay? It's spelt Shemuel here, but it's the same person as Samuel. And now look at the genealogy. Try to remember what we read in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Joel was the son of Shemuel, the son of Elkanah. Remember? Elkanah, husband of Hannah. The son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel. It said Eliu in 1 Samuel, but it says Eliel here. The son of Toa. It said Tofu there. The son of Zuph. Remember Zuph? So it's the same Samuel, and it's the same family. Some of the names are spelled differently, but it's him. And if you go all the way down to verse 38, there's many generations. It comes to the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, the son of Israel. So Samuel was a Levite, and the Levites were a tribe, one of the 12 tribes of Israel, that God chose to be servants of his, to set up and dismantle and reassemble the tabernacle, to teach the people the word of God. So it was an important family, okay? And Samuel was among them because Elkanah was in that lineage. So back to Samuel chapter 1, pick it up in verse 9 here. And it says, well, just to fill in what happened. So Elkanah brought his two wives, Hannah and Peninnah, to Shiloh, where the tabernacle was, every year to do an annual sacrifice. And Hannah was just so upset that she had no children, and Peninnah kept very smugly talking about her kids, and then like, too bad you don't have any. And she got very upset. In verse 9 it says, "So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord." Now, in this section, it refers to the tabernacle sometimes as the temple, even though it's not the temple that Solomon built, because Solomon isn't born yet, okay? So it's the tabernacle, but there might have been some other wooden structure that they had built around it that they call it the temple or the house sometimes, but it's not the permanent temple of Solomon. Verse 10, "And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head." So this is a vow. It's a very solemn promise that she would not fail to keep. And part of the vow was that she would give the child to God so he would serve in the tabernacle all the days of his life and be a man of God, and no razor would come upon his head. So that would indicate that she would consider him a Nazarite all the days of his life. A Nazarite was one who made a vow to God. And normally a Nazarite would cut his hair at the beginning of the period of time that he had dedicated to God. And then during the course of that time, his hair would grow back. And at the end of that time, it might be a week, a month, a year, 10 years, but whatever time he had dedicated to God, he would cut his hair again at the end of it and then bring the hair to the priest to offer upon the altar, signifying the length of time that he was dedicating his life to God. So Hannah said, there shall no razor come upon his head, like ever. Like he will be dedicated to God all his life. And there were several people that were like that. I believe John the Baptist was one, definitely Samson, okay? So Samuel would have had very long hair. over the course of time. Never cut it. Verse 12 says, "And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth." So he's looking at her across the room there and saying, something wrong with that person. Mm-hmm. "Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken." So he just made that assumption without anything else except seeing that she's very upset, moving her lips, not talking out loud. "And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee." So kind of barks at her with this reproof. "And Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial," or Belial. And the word Belial means someone who's worthless, okay? Just an unprofitable, good-for-nothing person, an ungodly person that's just no good. That's what it means in the Hebrew. "So count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial," or Belial, "for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him." So he spoke for God at that time. I don't know whether he had revelation to do so, but his words did come to pass. So it's very likely that he checked in with God and God told him that. Verse 18, "And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad." She had a word from God now, and she still didn't have kids. She still wasn't pregnant, but she had a word from God that she believed. So she wasn't sad anymore. She knew it's going to be okay. "And they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her." It means they came together and she got pregnant. She conceived. "Wherefore it came to pass when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, Because I have asked him of the Lord." Now the word Samuel, when you look it up, the Brown Driver Briggs definition says Samuel means his name is El. When we look at the Strong's definition, it says it's from the passive participle of these two words. One is shama, which is to hear or listen, okay? And the other word is El, which is one of the names for God, like Elohim, okay? It means the mighty one, means God. So when you put that together, it means like I asked him of God and God heard, okay? God heard and she got the baby boy. "And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever." So she was going to fulfill her vow and take her child when he was ready to function without his mother and leave him there at the tabernacle for the rest of his life. "And Elkanah her husband said unto her, Do what seemeth good, tarry until thou have weaned him, only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young." So he was just a little boy at this point. "And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord." Remember that? You thought I was drunk and I really wasn't, but you know, we prayed to God and you said God would answer the prayer. Verse 27, "For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. There's so much in that verse, I get choked up when I read it. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. Now, in chapter 2, I'm not going to read the first 10 verses. It's Hannah just pouring her heart out to God and just blessing God. And it seems kind of like an inspired utterance, but she's just so thankful. And she thanks God for what he had done. Now, we'll pick it up in verse 11, where it says, And Elkanah went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. So mom and dad went home. Little Samuel's still there. Now, verse 12, the sons of Eli were sons of Belial, worthless, rotten guys. They knew not the Lord. And here they are, the sons of the high priest, and they didn't know God at all. They're just ungodly, bad guys. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was in seething, while it was boiling, with the flesh hook of 3 teeth in his hand, and he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh and to all the Israelites that came thither. And we're going to look at what the actual law says about the priest getting a portion of the sacrifice in a few minutes. But verse 15 says, Also, before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, Give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. And if any man said unto him, Let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth. Then he would answer him, Nay, but thou shalt give it me now, and if not, I will take it by force. So they bullied the people, and this was the servant. So he's doing the billing of Hophni and Phinehas here, and speaking for them, and just being rude and mean to the people. Verse 17 says, Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. You know, there's sacrifices that they were required to do, others that were voluntary, like burnt offerings and thank offerings and things like that. But they hated to go there and offer the sacrifices because these guys, they didn't do it according to the word and they were mean to them. Now let's look at Leviticus chapter 7. That tells us what God told Moses about the high priest and his sons. Of course, this was in the days of Aaron, the high priest, and Moses, but it would still apply, and how it was supposed to be done. So Leviticus 7, verse 29, says, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, He that offereth the sacrifice of his peace offerings unto the Lord shall bring his oblation, or sacrifice unto the Lord of the sacrifice of his peace offerings. His own hands shall bring the offerings of the Lord made by fire, the fat with the breast. It shall he bring that the breast may be waved for a wave offering before the Lord. And the priest shall burn the fat upon the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron's and his sons'. So they're supposed to take this breast offering and burn the fat on the altar, and then the breast would belong to Aaron and his sons to eat. And the right shoulder shall ye give unto the priest for an heave offering of the sacrifices of your peace offerings. He among the sons of Aaron that offereth the blood of the peace offerings and the fat shall have the right shoulder for his part. For the wave breast and the heave shoulder have I taken of the children of Israel from off the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and have given them unto Aaron the priest and unto his sons by a statute forever from among the children of Israel. So this is a perpetual statute. So this would apply to Eli and to his sons Hophni and Phinehas. But they weren't doing it that way. They were boiling the meat and taking a flesh hook and grabbing out whatever they wanted to, And if there was a breast offering, they just would take it and not burn the fat upon the altar. So it just, the job wasn't getting done. The people were getting upset. They could read from Leviticus what was supposed to be done, but it wasn't being done. And the guys were mean to them. And they just hated doing that. And God was very displeased. So back to 1 Samuel chapter 2, we'll pick it up in verse 18, where it says, "But Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child, girded with the linen ephod." So the priest wore this linen garment called an ephod, and they had a little one for little Samuel, okay? "Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice." So there's several years going by now where he starts out with as a little boy, but he's getting a little older. "And Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, 'The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord.' And they went unto their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters." So in addition to Samuel, she had five more kids, so six altogether, one that stayed at the tabernacle, but the other five that she had at home. So God really blessed her. "And the child Samuel grew before the Lord." So at least, you know, five, six, seven more years have passed at this point. Verse 22, "Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation." Now, this is going further. These guys are getting worse and worse. So not only are they bullying the people regarding the sacrifices, but there's women that assembled at the door. And the word assembled, most of the translations had that they served. They were there to serve. They would open the door and you know, keep it clean, and they volunteered to do work there at the tabernacle of the congregation. And Hophni and Phinehas would just take him aside and have sex with him. And Eli heard about it. Verse 23, "And he said unto them, 'Why do you such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them.'" Now, the other thing is, Eli scolded them, but he didn't do anything to stop them. Eli did not restrain them. He just scolded them, but they didn't listen to him. Verse 26, "And the child Samuel grew on," so he's getting older and older, "and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men." Now, he's growing, but he's still called a child. And someone can be called a child, that Hebrew word for child, there's a range anywhere from infancy up until adolescence. At this point, he's probably getting into his teenage years. "And there came a man of God unto Eli." It doesn't tell us the man's name, just that he is a man of God. "So there came a man of God unto Eli and said unto him, 'Thus saith the Lord, did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house?'" He's talking about the time that Moses and Aaron, Eli would have been a direct descendant of Aaron, Moses' brother, the first high priest, back when they were in Egypt. "And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel? Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat of the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people? You know, I gave you the breast and the shoulder, but you're just taking whatever you want. Your sons are doing this. You know about it. You're not doing anything about it, and you're getting fat off of eating the stuff. Wherefore, the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me. For them that honor me, I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, and there shall not be an old man in thine house. That means they're going to die young, okay? And thou shalt see an enemy in my habitation, in all the wealth which God shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in thine house forever. And the man of thine house, whom I shall not cut off from mine altar, shall be to consume thine eyes and to grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thine house shall die in the flower of their age. And this shall be a sign unto thee, that shall come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. And I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that every one that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and shall say, put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's offices, that I may eat a piece of bread. So he said, there's going to be another priest arise. Still have to be a son of Aaron, but there are other sons of Aaron besides Eli and his family. So this man, whoever he was, and God chose not to give his name, but he's speaking for God. So he had received word of knowledge, the things that had been going on, the things that God would do, and a word of wisdom to go to Eli and speak these words exactly the way he did, beginning with, thus saith the Lord. So this is a man that was speaking for God. So that man had received the word of knowledge, the word of wisdom, and he was acting on it. Now, it's important that we read this before we get to the next chapter where Samuel starts receiving revelation from God. So let's go to chapter 3, verse 1. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli. So at this point, he's likely a teenager. There's more that he can do, and he's doing the work. And the word of the Lord was precious in those days. There was no open vision. So apart from that man of God that spoke to Eli, there's not a lot of people getting revelation right now. Verse 2, and it came to pass at that time, when Eli was laid down in his place, and his eyes began to wax dim that he could not see, and ere or before the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep, that the Lord called Samuel. And he answered, here am I. And he ran unto Eli. So God called him. He said, here I am. But in his mind, he wasn't saying that to God. He was saying that to Eli, because God's voice to him must have sounded just like Eli's. So he ran unto Eli and said, here am I, for thou callest me. And he said, I called not. Lie down again. And he went and lay down. And the Lord called yet again, Samuel. And Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, here am I, for thou didst call me. And he answered, I called not, my son. Lie down again. I'm trying to get some sleep here. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. So he was ministering in the tabernacle, doing the work based on what the scriptures had said and whatever Eli would tell him to do. But he didn't yet know the Lord in the sense that he heard God talk to him, okay? He didn't yet learn to recognize the voice of God, but he will soon. Verse 7 again, now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him, okay? He had the written word, the scriptures that he could read, but to hear from God, he didn't yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time, and he arose and went to Eli and said, here am I, for thou didst call me. And Eli perceived that the Lord had called the child. It finally dawned on him, He's hearing his name called. I didn't call him. Somebody called him. It was definite and clear enough that he keeps coming to me. So he perceived that the Lord had called the child. Now he's going to give him some training on how to receive revelation. Verse 9. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, go lie down, and it shall be, if he call thee, that thou shalt say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. That's the instruction. When you hear your name called, it's not going to be me. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to call you. But if he calls you, you say, speak, Lord. That's Lord Jehovah, okay? Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. It means I'm your servant. It means I'm ready to do whatever you have for me to do. And I'm listening. So I know it's you. I'm listening. Go ahead and give me whatever information or instructions you have for me. Okay? So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Now, before we get to the next part, I just want to show you that there's other places where someone heard from God, or in a couple of cases, the Lord Jesus Christ in the book of Acts, and they used a similar expression to let God or Jesus Christ know, here I am, you know, speak. So let's go to Acts chapter 9. And this is with Saul of Tarsus, later known as the Apostle Paul. And this is when Saul was on his way to Damascus to round up believers there and take them back to Jerusalem and have them tried and executed. And he sees that blinding light, falls to the ground, and he hears a voice. And in verse 4, the voice says, Saul, Saul. See, he fell to the earth, heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? So he heard his name being called. And he said, who art thou, Lord? And by Lord, it just means sir. He didn't know who was talking to him. He didn't know who was addressing him, just that it was someone above him. So he said, who art thou, Lord? He didn't have the spirit yet. He didn't have discerning of spirits to be able to know who it was. And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. That told him a lot right there, that everything that he had heard from these believers in Jesus Christ that he had been causing to blaspheme and putting to death, what they were saying was right. He's really alive. He says, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, now knowing who's talking to him, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And that expression is very similar to the gist of, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth, right? He's addressing this Lord, meaning, okay, I'm your servant. What will you have me to do? I know it's you talking to me. My ears are open. Go ahead and tell me. And then the Lord Jesus Christ gave him instructions. Now, down in verse 10, it says there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias. And to him said the Lord, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ here, in a vision, Ananias, again, called his name. And he said, behold, I am here, Lord. Okay, behold, I am here, Lord. Again, that's very akin to speak for thy servant heareth, because when you call someone Lord, that makes me your servant. Behold, I am here, Lord. I'm listening. Tell me what it is that you want me to know. And he gave him instructions, in this case, word of knowledge and word of wisdom regarding ministering to Paul. So I just wanted to look at the responses to people having their name called out to them by either God or the Lord Jesus Christ. Go to Exodus chapter 3. This is regarding Moses. So Moses spent the first 80 years of his life knowing about God, but God had not yet spoken to him. In verse 1, it says, Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burnt with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, called his name. And he said, Here am I. So it wasn't exactly speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth, but here am I indicates, okay, I'm listening. Go ahead and speak. And then God spoke with him and introduced himself, like in verse 6, said, I'm the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. So God made sure Moses knew who he was that was talking to him, and then he gave him information, word of knowledge, and then instructions, word of wisdom. We're not going to read this whole record. I just wanted to look at the response where he said, Here am I. Okay? In Genesis 46. Now, you don't see this in every record. There are many records where God speaks to somebody. Like, I was looking at Genesis 6, where God spoke to Noah and told him what to do to build the ark and told him what was going to happen. It doesn't record Noah's response to God. It just says he did everything God told him to do. So it doesn't show the exchange of words on that initial encounter between God and the person. Same thing with Abraham. Is God spoke to Abraham, and then just as Abraham did what it was that God told him. So you don't always see this recorded in every record, but in some of them you do. Now with Jacob, there were previous records where God appeared unto him, and he knew it was God, like he had the vision of the ladder going up to heaven and God at the top and the angels ascending and descending, and God spoke to him in this vision at night, and then he woke up in the morning and said, oh my goodness, God was in this place and I didn't know it, and he pours oil on a rock and stuff. It doesn't show him talking to God, but responding after he woke up, saying, wow, that was God talking to me. But in chapter 46, it seems like it had been a long time since God personally directly spoke with Jacob, because we'll see that God kind of reintroduces himself to him at this point. This is when Jacob found out that his son Joseph, that he thought had been dead for a good number of years, is actually alive, and the governor of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And he saw the wagons that came up from Egypt with the stuff to carry him down there. And at first he didn't believe what his sons told him, but he saw some physical evidence and said, okay, I guess Joseph is actually alive. But now God's going to talk to him in Genesis 46. Verse 1 says, And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob, called his name, and he said it twice, as we saw in some other records. Jacob, Jacob, and he said, Here am I. Same response that Moses had given him. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. This is why it seems like it's been a while. God had to kind of reintroduce himself to him. I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So God confirmed to him by revelation now that, yes, Joseph is alive and he's there. Okay? Don't be afraid to go down there. I'm going to take care of you. Your family will grow after you get there. Let's go back to 1 Samuel now. So we'll want to get to the part where God talks to him. 1 Samuel 3, verse 10. So now he has the instructions from Eli, who probably in the past had received some revelation from God. And he told him, lay down if he calls you. Verse 9 again. Say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, Samuel, Samuel, said his name twice here. Then Samuel answered, speak, for thy servant heareth. He knew it was God now, and he identifies himself as God's servant, and I'm listening. And the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do a thing in Israel at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever. So that was the message. And Samuel lay until the morning, probably didn't sleep at all, and opened the doors of the house of the Lord. And Samuel feared to show Eli the vision, because this was bad news to deliver, and that's his boss. Then Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." And he said, "Here am I." He knew it was actually Eli this time. And he said, "What is the thing that the Lord hath said unto thee? I pray thee, hide it not from me. God do so to thee and more also, if thou hide anything from me of all the things that he hath said unto thee." So he commanded him to tell him with a threat, "God do so to thee and more also." I don't know if he's speaking for God there, but made him know, "You have to tell me." And Samuel told him every whit, every word that God said, and hid nothing from him. And he said, Eli said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good." So this was part of Samuel's training, actually. It was Eli that gave them the instruction how to respond when God calls your name. And then he had him repeat everything God told him. And he confirmed to him, he said, "It is the Lord." He knew it was the Lord because he had very similar words from that other unnamed man of God that we read about in the last chapter. So now Samuel knows, okay, I know how to recognize God's voice. I heard what God said. I repeated what he said. It was confirmed that it was right. Verse 19, and Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and did let none of his words fall to the ground. That means he gave Samuel words to speak, and God always, always, always backed them up. God made sure that whatever Samuel spoke, that he gave him to speak, would come to pass. And because of that, verse 20, and all Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, north to south, they all knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. They all knew because they heard him speak. They saw what he spoke come to pass. He spoke for God, saying, "Thus saith the Lord, this is what God said." And he would say it, God would bring it to pass, and everybody knew Samuel was a genuine prophet. And the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. He wasn't revealing himself to Eli anymore, but he was revealing himself to Samuel. Now in the next chapter, I'll just have to summarize for you, there was a battle against the Philistines, and the army of Israel, they went to fight against the Philistines, and they were losing, and they said, "Let's go get the Ark of the Covenant and bring it out into the battlefield. Then we know God will help us." So they brought the Ark of the Covenant out, and they started winning, and then the Philistines said, "Hey, they're beating us. We can't let that happen. Come on, everybody, buck up, be brave, be strong, and fight for your nation." And they defeated them, and they captured the Ark of the Covenant. So the Philistines now had it, okay? And a messenger came to Eli to tell him what happened. And also, on that day that the Ark was taken, it says Hophni and Phinehas, both of them, were killed that day. So let me pick this up in verse 11. And the Ark of God was taken. The two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain, just like that unnamed man of God said would happen, both of them in one day. And there ran a man of Benjamin out of the army and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent and with earth upon his head, indicating he had bad news to bring. And when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside, watching, for his heart trembled for the Ark of God. He knew the Ark was out there. He said, "I hope it comes back." And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. And when Eli heard the noise of the crying, he said, "What meaneth the noise of this tumult?" And the man came in hastily and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see. And the man said unto Eli, "I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army." And he said, "What is there done, my son?" And the messenger answered and said, "Israel is fled before the Philistines, and there hath been also a great slaughter among the people, and thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken." But it came to pass, when he made mention of the ark of God, that he fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died. For he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So the news of the ark being taken, that's what really did him in. So that's all we're going to cover tonight. But we see a young man being trained on how to receive revelation from God. We see another man of God speaking words that came to pass. We see that God's bringing Samuel's words to pass. He's established to be a prophet. We might look at some of the other things that happened with Samuel next week, because there's a lot in the book of Samuel that shows the inner workings and conversations between him and God that will be very interesting to look at. But just what we looked at tonight just taught us so much about the revelation manifestations and how God will personally teach someone. And that's something to remember. God can teach you personally how to walk with him. And he will do that. If you ask him, "Teach me, God," he will. And it might not be in the same way that he taught Samuel or Jeremiah, but it will be personal to you. And God can let you know how to recognize his voice, hear the things that he has to tell you, see the things he has to show you, because you're his child and he cares about you. Okay? So that's enough for tonight. God bless everybody.